Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. It is question and answer then. You have some questions? Yes.
I was wondering if you could explain or talk about the brain as another sense organ. So I tend to identify with that. One, two is kind of self and me, kind of like whatever.
Some interesting little data behind that I'd like to introduce first. One of the things is in the book that His Holiness has out about science and science, Western science and Eastern science, meditation and science. He talks about the fact that the brain, which is 2% of the body's weight, uses 20% of the body's energy. Normally, or whatever, for most people. That's interesting, isn't it? The other thing that's interesting is that in Discover Magazine, which does these little blips of interesting data and makes them into sort of little short journalistic blips, making the science palatable to others, it's changed a lot since it first came out. They had this article a few issues back about doing this study of people about how they make decisions. And they had this large group of people. And they gave them all this really important information about, I think it was maybe buying a new car or buying a new house or investments or something. The experts there, they had literature. They really spent a long time going over it, making sure everybody got all the information. It was all given to them for, you know, a couple of hours, 2-3 hours. They divided the group into two. One group they sent one way and they had them doing jigsaw puzzles or crosswords or playing cards. The other group they had continuing the study and the discussion and research. Then they gave them all, brought them all together and gave them all the choice, which choice did they make? And a great percentage of the people who had not thought about it after they were given the information scored higher than the percentage of the people who kept thinking about it, trying to make their decision. Interesting, eh? Your brain works on past data. Your senses brain, your consciousness involved with your senses, works on present data. The brain takes the data, and then if you leave it alone, leave it in the brain, your senses operate in terms of what's present now. And meanwhile, the brain is getting more information based on new experience. So it was more likely to come up with a different answer. There are four levels of consciousness in Buddhism. To all intents and purposes, we can call the first level the consciousness of, called vijnana, or the thinking consciousness, or the brain, or the five aggregates. Consciousness that names. Second level of consciousness is the consciousness of the sense door. Third level of consciousness is the consciousness that becomes the mental propensities, sort of the consciousness of the potentials, the possibilities, the ayatana consciousness. And the fourth level of consciousness is called balanga, or level, depth level consciousness that doesn't have any particular sense of subject object. Consciousness without object. When you try to make all your decisions from your brain, which is where the pictures come or the sense of ideas come, without giving information, feeding information to that, or that level of consciousness, and then just letting it rest, and letting the other levels of consciousness collect data, and then present that data to the brain, and then the brain forms that into a new decision. What you tend to do is repeat the same patterns of what you've done before, which are always based, because the brain remembers according to like or dislike in the moment. You know that when you remember somebody when you're really happy, you can remember the things you like about them. When you remember something when you're really pissed off, you can remember why you wish you didn't talk to them. Right? Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
The same I, brain. So although there is the general feeling that I am the vijnana consciousness, if you actually start examining that, there is no steady I in that consciousness. Except that whichever I is present at any one time feels like the only I that has ever been and will ever be and has never changed their mind. So we say things like, I always tell you that. Totally not aware of the times when you say, you know, I usually like that, but whatever. True? And then 10 minutes later, we'll be saying something totally different, won't we? Is that true or not? So when you find yourself stuck in a pattern of having to be right, usually what you're doing is going to your last right answer, rather than letting yourself let the new information that you might have learned in the last 20 seconds be part of your learning. Therefore, you start having a sense of having to defend a position rather than being in the joy of learning in your life. Is that good?
I'm not sure if like I can see the one of sight, you know, hearing, you know, touch, they seem more kind of perceiving this.
They have a consciousness to them.
Yeah.
They are organs of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
They are made of cells, but the same cells that are here don't respond to light and form as the ones that are here.
Mm-hmm.
Do they?
Mm-hmm.
Or?
And the brain collects them all.
They are continuously taking in data, which goes to the ayatana consciousness, the one that's always rumbling around, which is sometimes called the storehouse consciousness. In my analogy the other day, I don't know if you were here for that or it could have been to some other class, I talked about that what we do with our minds. I've talked about this a couple of times. I talked about it in Calgary, and I think I've talked about it here too, is that when we want something, we feel this kind of slight craving. We're not sure what we want. And then we go to a vending machine that has our usual things on it that is sitting in front of a warehouse. The vending machine actually is a narrowing down of the warehouse which includes every possibility from all previous lifetimes. All is the water of all possibility there waiting for us, the ayatana. But there is a front door to it, which is actually our particular vending machine, which is our habitual things of getting when we feel a craving. And it's there, and we put our money in, and we push a button. And so every time you push the button on one thing, it tends to load up with twice as many of that as anything else. So I guess that pretty soon, every time you go to the warehouse, you go to the vending machine and always take the same thing, regardless of the fact that the warehouse is full of multi-possibilities. So when the sense doors are picking up information, the Belonga consciousness is especially working in sleep or when there isn't any particular awareness. It's just a depth murmur of consciousness. And then the Ayatana is taking in any data that comes from the senses. And it's sort of like, it's just, if it's not a, what they call a strong consciousness, if it's just a little, like you're sleeping and a car goes by, you don't wake up. You're sleeping and a car goes by and then there's a crash and then a bunch of people get out and start shooting each other, you wake up because that's a strong sense consciousness that arrests the Belonga flow. It immediately goes into the consciousness of Ayatana, the storehouse. What will happen unless you are for a moment frozen, not knowing what to do, is you'll just automatically hit the vending machine and get your usual response to that. What you train yourself to do in meditation is watch the habitual thing come down the chute and just push the cancel button saying, I want a wider choice. Mm. So you start broadening your ability to choose from the potential of your being how you want to respond. I'm putting this in non-academic language. I don't think you'll hear any Buddhists talking about consciousness in terms of vending machines and warehouses. Mm-hmm. But it actually, to me, fits what the process is. Does that make sense to you, Jack? Mm. And it's basically a lot of the Abhidhamma talk, for example, is about the brain consciousness, which is the body brain consciousness, the brain that tells you the form of your thought, the sense consciousness, which is in charge of how input is going to trigger the Ayatana consciousness, and the Ayatana consciousness, and all the different ways that the 89 streams of interacting potential moods create, according to the to the Tibetans, the 184,000 different reactions you can have. I'm not sure how to count it, and believe me, yeah. I don't fucking want to know. There are places where even I stop. I'm not interested. And so they say the 180, sometimes they say 180,000 types of suffering, and the 180,000 types of dharma that the Buddha taught, because according to that tradition, they say that for every way that there is of being caught in suffering, the Buddha gave a teaching to free beings. That's where you will sometimes see that quote in Tibetan texts. But that's what they're talking about. They're talking about all the different ways of combinations where you can get information back from a yatana to the vinaya and decide, I am angry, rather than when I am surprised or jolted out of a state of comfort, my preferred response is anger, and I have never looked to see whether I have a secondary response that I prefer. That is my habitual response. That's what I've got stocked in the vending machine that is the little front door for the warehouse of possibility that I usually access. So the more you repeat one habit, and what, why don't you want to get that quote off your kitchen downstairs and bring it up? The more you repeat a habit, the more you repeat one action, always going for the same brand of response, the more that becomes the biggest button on your vending machine, because that's the one you use most often. So the more that feels like you. So you actually think you are that. And I'm always angry when somebody doesn't tell me where they're going. Or I'm always angry when everybody insists on telling me where they're going. You know, it really doesn't matter what the thing is. It's the I identity. Now, go back to the thousands of times I've sat here and said to you, when you perform an action that you've done before, your body, your brain gives the message to the body to release what?
Endorphins.
Why? Because you did it before and survived, so it must be safe. When you perform an action that you haven't done before, your body releases what? Why? because you haven't done this before, you better be aware. So with the endorphins, it's, oh yeah, this is fine, this is me. Mm-hmm. With adrenaline, it's like a little edgy. If you teach yourself to enjoy the awareness of adrenaline, you can be calm in the energy. Mm-hmm. You always go for a new choice. So a lot of the Buddhist advice is it's very useful from time to time to try to see the beautiful in the unbeautiful in the beautiful. When you see something you don't like, find something you like in it. When you see something you like, find something you don't like in it. Just to even out your habituation, which will rule you otherwise. And you don't even know because it feels comfortable because you've done it before. Like, is that logic or is that lemming consciousness? So in this quote that Bob and Kathy have on their kitchen for July 4th from the Rigpa Glimpse of the Day, it says, the masters tell us that there is an aspect of our minds that is in its fundamental basis a state called the ground of the ordinary mind. It functions like a storehouse. It's called ayatana, usually, which means storehouse, by the way. I'm calling it warehouse for my analogy. In which the imprints of past actions caused by, and it says here, by our negative emotions, but actually by any of our desires or activities. Positive, negative, neutral. And not just emotions, but that will do. Are all stored like seeds. When the right conditions arise, they germinate and manifest as circumstances and situations in our lives. If we have a habit of thinking in a particular pattern, positive or negative, then these tendencies will be triggered and provoked very easily and recur and then go on recurring. So I'm talking about the vending machine for that part of it, right? With constant repetition, our inclinations and habits become steadily more entrenched and continue increasing and gathering power. And we like them because we've done them before. Even when we sleep, this is how they come to determine our life, our death, and our rebirth. Is that useful? So the Abhidhamma is basically examining those four levels of consciousness from the point of view of someone who knows them as clarity, who clearly can see them. The rest of the teaching is talking about, okay, you clearly can't see them. How do you work your way up to that clarity? The Abhidhamma purportedly is, from that point, what they look like. The language is a little difficult sometimes, but if you get a sense of the overall pattern and overview of Abhidhamma, it helps to then you can go slower at the 89 and how they cross over and become the, Is that okay? Nice question, thank you.
So going back to something you said when we are stuck in a pattern of needing to be right and we defend a position, did you say we go back to our last free thought or we create a free thought?
We go back to the last sense of when we're using our brains, we go back to the last experience that we had, because our brain basically is a reflection of what we already know. It doesn't give us a new experience. The brain names after a fact. Mm-hmm. You can see that in babies. Any of you ever seen a baby? Could I have a show of hands on that, please? Oh, good, all of you. Then I can talk quite freely about this. When you see a baby that has just come out of the womb, do they recognize you and say your name?
No.
No. No. Do they actually perceive their hands or anything when they're a week old? usually a bit older, isn't it? Usually when they're lying on their back sometime and they're, you've seen me do this so many times, I'm going to do it again. They're going, and they're actually able to isolate an object and see it. It's based on billions and billions of experiences until the brain builds up a language to be able to name. Not a name yet, but name familiar, separate object. Then they learn how to move their hand. Then they learn how to move both hands. Then they start making noises and laughing and blah, 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 and like. Then they notice that certain words have a certain kind of energy, certain sounds have a certain kind of energy with the person that they're ba-baing at, right? Then they start perfecting that, and then they get the word mama. And they get dada. And they get m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m-m- the names come. That's still true now. Before you experience something, you cannot actually name it. The difference between talking about a movie you saw about hang gliding and going hang gliding is very specific. The difference about reading a cookbook and eating salmon with a crusted paste of ground peppers and Parmesan cheese on it is quite a different experience, isn't it? The tongue does something. I used to get you, I don't know if you remember this, this was quite a while ago, I used to get a glass of water in front of you. Do you remember this? And I used to get you to sit there and imagine reaching out, feeling the coldness of the outside of the glass, picking it up, smelling it, sipping it, and putting it down and swallowing it. And practice thinking that because you've had the experience, even when you've had the experience, and then doing it right now and looking at the difference. I suggest you try that kind of thing a few times. See the difference between what you think of the reality of your thoughts and what you know of the reality of sensual consciousness giving information to the brain, which is always different than you think. Even if you've done it 1,000 times. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're thinking something out, you're always thinking depending on the mood you're in when you're thinking. Always. But if you bring your body into it, the mood you're in will have an effect. But the senses themselves feed their consciousness into it, and it gives a little less power to your present emotional state and more power to the awareness in the moment. Does that make it clear? Neat, huh?
Yeah. So
awareness means being in the moment. And it is the number one tool you have in your mind, regardless of your problems, regardless of your difficulties. Whatever your condition is, if you can do even 1 second of awareness a day, that's more healing than you will get from billions of moments of counseling.
1 second
really?
Of healing?
Yeah. 1 second is a pretty long time when you actually pay attention. Just present awareness. Because it
feels good.
So when
maybe I'm exaggerating, but I don't think so. I've never measured it, is what I'm trying to say. I'm just making a blatant, probably obviously wrong statement, but I like it.
When we're stuck in a pattern, needing to be right, and defending that position, so is that when in the loving kindness, when we do, may I be happy, and you think happy, is that what changes it? because we've now got...
No, you remember a time when you experienced happiness.
Right.
First. And you say, yeah, I do know what happiness is.
Right. That's how...
But you remember it like this. You remember, okay, I remember when I was watching the lightning last night. And where was I standing? And was it raining? And what was the sound like? And what was I wearing? I was outside. Was I smoking? Was someone with me? What was it like against the clouds? So I get the sense impressions from the memory, not just the mind story about lightning. I actually start saying, what was I wearing? So my body sense of feel is there. Was the breeze? Was it cool or warm? It was actually quite warm last night. So then when I've got that, then I say, and what was that happy? Yeah, I like that. But now I've grounded it not just in my memory of lightning, which includes whatever mood of lightning comes when I'm in the mood that I'm remembering it. But I'm remembering a particular time and then clothing it in that memory, like bringing the senses of that time into it too. And then you say, yeah, that's happiness. I know happy. And may I be happy? May I be well and happy like that? Make me like that right now. And then you start building on that. And once you do that, it gets quite easy to remember that you do know what happiness is, regardless of the circumstance. You don't start making other people responsible for your happiness. Because a lot of the people that you met, you know, in the last 10 years that you use as responsible for your happiness, you were happy before you met them, and they weren't around. So you knew what happiness was before them. So you see how, like, when you attach the power of your life to somebody else, you lose your sense of what really happened to you, because the idea that they are the object and they are the ones that blocks you from feeling your own power. If everybody doesn't have as much power as me, I'm wasting my time. And I got news for you, I'm not wasting my time. I know some people, they really try to tell me what a victim they are. I'm not interested. I mean, I really like the powerful way that they play victim. And I can really go along for the ride until I've actually caught them out a couple of times and they know I've caught them out, so that we can both point to that and I can say, so now you see, I don't need to listen to you talk about victim. At which point they usually try to screw me around left, right, and center. They insult me. A couple of people have threatened to sue me, you know. Some people leave and never talk to me again. But a few of them don't. They say, oh, but I can't do it without you. I say, oh, I think you probably can. But that was a good try. And our dialogue continues. Is that straightforward? Because it's not true that enlightenment is something you have to get. It is true that it's something you should stop ignoring. Regardless of who you are. And why you're ignoring it is you're clinging to some name brands that you got in the vending machine that you have an addiction for. And maybe there's powerful reason for you to keep thinking that there's something there you have to solve. But there is equally powerful reason for you to look and see, is there anything else available? Isn't there? If liberation is possible here and now, isn't that a good reason just to check in, just in case you might want that more than you want your neuroses? You know, maybe every other Sunday or something for half an hour, you know, when everybody's gone out. I don't know. Try it on in front of the mirror. You don't have to decide to keep it or anything. see how it would look in traffic, you know.
You never know.
Is that reasonable? Ms. Dolores?
Yeah.
More questions?
I like the questions.
Isn't it really that our brain is holding us back from living in the present by the fact that it's digesting all the past?
No, the brain isn't holding us back. Our sense of preferring the brain to present awareness, because we don't realize that we have the power to be aware in the present, because we haven't gotten that from the vending machine enough. It's like training ourselves out of bad habits. And you know that when something totally catches your awareness, like when you're working with someone who actually wants to buy a home, and you actually pay attention to them and sense what they want, and have a sense you might know where it is. You're not particularly trying to figure out what you did the last 20 times, right? You're aware, you're present with them, you feel the, and that's just natural to you, isn't it?
So the brain is working in the present.
The brain is taking the information of the present and making it part of its experience for the future. You know, in the tarot, somewhere in the tarot, it talks about that, and it says, a wise man says, I have decided, dot, 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 and then it says, he just knows better, that's all. You know, it's like your brain is actually supplied with the information that the depth decides. All of the important decisions of my life, I don't make with my brain. There's a little messenger that announces it to me sometimes when I open my mouth and start talking. I don't even know, and then 1 second later I'm saying what I'm doing for the next 10 years, and I haven't even decided up to that point. But, you know, some part of me has made the decision. And I may waffle about it or bitch about it. I may not even like it. I didn't want to go on the Amazon when Rinpoche sent me a ticket. I was pissed off at him. Thank you very much. I'm busy. As I packed my bags, got my vaccinations, people started giving money to go in the currency that was capable of being spent there. People brought me mosquito netting and stuff, everything. It was like every time I had another reason why it wasn't going to work, it would arise. My heart said, oh, I'm going to the Amazon. My something was on my mind, said, I want to read a book about it. You know, I'd like to go to the Queen Charlotte's for the Amazon. No, I don't think so. That's a great trip. Then that's a small example. Or I'm in Lima, Peru, you know. I don't know if you know that it almost never rains in Lima. Because the winds there blow the moisture right past. That whole area on that side of the Andes Mountains that comes right down to the ocean is so dry. I wake up one morning in Lima, everybody else is gone, I'm basically by myself, I have almost no money. I wake up and I realize I'm going swimming. Can't swim in the ocean there. I got no money. There are no swimming pools that I know of. Cut out, get on, get dressed, you know, go have something to eat, and then I go, I find myself looking for a bus. I get on a bus and I say, this goes to a swimming pool. He doesn't speak English, but for some reason he's heard swimming pool. And he says, no, no, and he writes down a number and points, and across the street, 2 seconds later, there's the bus with that number. This goes to a swimming pool. He speaks English. He says, no, I stop before the pool. You know what? I don't even swim. At that point, I was still afraid of water. Anything over my head freaked me out. I went into blind terror. As soon as I was over my head in water, my body would go into a fetal position. I would sink. Now let's figure this out, shall we? I'm by myself. I speak a language no one around me speaks. I'm going swimming in Lima. In a swimming pool in Lima. There is no water in Lima.
And you woke up in the morning just knowing you were going swimming.
I woke up and I stretched and I thought, what am I going to do today? And it was just right there. Oh, I'm going swimming. And I get off at the end of the bus and the driver says, walk, you know, a mile. I walk along, there's nothing. Then there's these trees. And there's this private golf and country club. I walk up the long driveway, which is tree lined with water watering the grass. I go to the private reception. I say, I've come to go swimming. She says, the pool is closed. We're cleaning it. Are you a member? No, I'm not a member. You can't go swimming if you're not a member. And the pool's closed. We're not allowed to let anybody in. I think, okay, that's over. I'm about to walk out. Something stops me, and this other man comes in. He says, hello, Nunya. And she says, oh, hello, Mr. Nunya. And they go, and he keeps looking over his shoulder at me. And he says, what's she, you know, like I can hear, understand a bit of their language. What's she doing here? Oh, she thinks she wants to go swimming and she's not a member. He said, oh, I'll sign her in. The pool hadn't started being cleaned yet. It was going to be clean. I had the whole pool to myself. I was there for like an hour and a half. Walked back to the bus, went back to Lima. So that to me was a wonkor about what the real intelligence of your being is. It isn't based on your preference. It isn't based on your ideas. It's based, that was a very profound teaching about faith. Not stupidity, but the willingness to open doors your logic wouldn't open. And it has nothing to do with me going swimming or swimming pools in Lima. It has to do with the water of all possibility being there, regardless of your belief. Nice, eh? I bet if I tried to go swimming because I knew there was a swimming pool, I wouldn't find the fucker. I betcha. If I wanted to say to people, hey, you know that swimming pool, they'll say, in Lima you're not, go ahead. Or the country club closed 2 years later, you know? Because that's not the point. The point is your brain can tell you why you don't like something. And you can get so caught up in that habit that you don't open doors because you're afraid. So you're feeding fear rather than the heart that is the center of all activity. Nothing is worth closing your heart. Whether I went swimming or not, whether I found the pool or not, was not the point. The point was that something told me what I was going to do, and I did it. And that was the clearest that, well, the third clearest that knowing had ever arisen to me. Since then, every once in a while, something arises in me, and I just know what I'm going to do. I don't have any reason beforehand, but the depth of your being is always collecting information, also from your heart. And your mind will give you all the logical information about why it didn't work before, or why you didn't like it, or, you know. But that has nothing to do with that there is. Mother Teresa did go through a war zone. When she got near the front, they stopped the war for some brief period of time. She went through, collected the kids she came for, walked out, and then the war started again. Just that window when she was there.
How did she know to go there? You can call it whatever you want to. I call it, there is a part of our being that knows when something is ripening. And it responds to that and lets us know. But if we don't learn to trust more than our opinions, we lose most of the value of our intelligence, our real intelligence. A poem I wrote once, miracles are commonplace. Unfortunately, we're not very often there when they happen. Is that useful? Because I was hurt once, I'm guarding myself against hurt. Because I was not admired for my sensitivity, I'm guarding myself against sensitivity. Because I had to watch out in the past for people who expected to maybe me to be what I did not feel confident at, I am guarding myself against incompetence. Right? Well, that's all very well and good, but what are you doing to open the doors for what you haven't explored in your life? I mean, have you awakened yet? Maybe you close some doors that are actually the natural awakening of your being. Without even knowing you've done it. Just by being who you think you are, rather than being who you don't know whether you are. And I'm not saying to do it with stupidity. Do you understand? It's not, if I just go, it will happen for me. No. There is a quality of depth wanting to know, or depth sense of, well, at least I need to take a step toward this. Not, of course it will work, but let me at least open myself to the possibility. I probably would ask 3 bus drivers, and if I didn't get anywhere, he said, well, it was nice of you to try. Well, the first driver knew there was a swimming pool somewhere. Try that bus. The second bus driver said, yeah, but I don't go that far. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I did have bus fare. To at least take it as far as you can before your mind stops you. Because you only have your pride to lose, and wouldn't that be just a terrible weight off your shoulders? Having to hold that mask up is just so tiring. If you read, I think, you know, I sometimes say to myself, look in the mirror and say to myself, if you really think you've got something to lose, maybe you should lose it. Because I get busy, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm losing my sense of what I need to do. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you should lose it. You know, maybe you should start as if this is the first day. You know? It's amazing how that just puts me right back in my body. Okay, what is it time for me to do now? Then I check the calendar, check that. Okay, how much time do I have to do this? But it stops me from going, oh, and then I've got to, and then I've got to, and then I've got to. From the brain worrying around like the hamster in the cage, creating lots of smoke screen.
I've noticed how fast that comes back in after retreat.
Oh.
Just like, like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also the sense, like just
because it's so close to retreat too, you can go,
I don't want to do that.
2 days ago, I was.
Or you can say, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
One of the things that's interesting also about doing a retreat where you actually let yourself be on the retreat is that when you come back to your home, you pretty well always very quickly pick everything up again. But then after a few days, you start saying, no, this isn't quite right. And then in your own life, in your own language, what you learned on the retreat starts to manifest more in your life. And I think that's why, so you actually not only know it on retreat, but you know you want to choose that in your life.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the Buddha used to send people from retreats into the market and to talk to people and work in a community and then back into the monastery, you know, from the monastery to the marketplace to the monastery to the marketplace. Because not only do you have to be able to do it in specialized circumstances, but you have to see in unspecialized circumstances whether or not you prefer to do that. And I think you need a balance of both. I know a lot of the people that I met in monasteries were there because they hated society, not because they were looking for liberation. Their strongest reason was they didn't want to be part of it. Not for positive reasons. The Buddha left his family because he realized he had nothing to give them. He wanted to see whether there was anything he could find to give them that was worth being a father for. Well, that makes sense to me. That's a reasonable aspiration. But because I don't want to have an affair, I'm not sure I want that. Therefore, I'll be a monk. You know? There's always going to be that controlling. Because that's a control, isn't it? So how is that going to come to the generosity of spirit that leads to awakening? How is it going to come? I don't see how it can. And the Buddha never said people in lay life couldn't awaken. He did say it's very easy to be caught up in the attachment. And it's good for them at least to get away once in a while. Because attachments are the most difficult to clear from the mind in order to be fully aware in the here and now. That's true. You know. There's love, and there's your love for the sake of all beings. And there's a difference, isn't there? If you can love all beings equally, that's different, isn't it? I remember one time our beloved teacher, and something like that, actually, I think it was in the middle of Body, Speech, and Mind notes. He looked around at us and he said, I can hate all of you equally. And I thought, yeah, you can, don't you? You can love us all equally, hate us all equally. That'd be interesting. I hadn't thought of it in those terms. Great wit he was, amongst other things. More questions? Yes, sir.
I just want to make one comment. One of the most profound lessons you ever taught me is when you actually made me pay attention to you when I was sorting dishes in the sink. When I was at your place on a retreat.
Right.
I actually found myself totally in the moment, even though I, 10 seconds before, had wanted to listen to a word you had to tell me in the second, all of a sudden I was actually fully, with every ounce of my being, paying attention to what you wanted to tell me about how to sort the dishes in the sink. And it didn't matter what about the sink, but it was, oh, this is what it's like to actually be fully in the moment and really interested in what somebody else has to say.
And there is no position in that, is there?
No.
Which is interesting, isn't it? When it is just awareness, there is no position. I mean, the world is huge.
It was a great sink dharma. I mean, I really
the sinking dharma.
Because it applied universally.
Yeah, exactly. Is
a reflection in the mirror. The senses give you.
Mm-hmm.
The senses is you are the mirror receiving the reflection. When jnana is the reflection in the mirror that you're looking at. It's lovely to actually have enough experience and start to be able to differentiate this is a different quality of consciousness
mm-hmm.
than that is. So, you know, it isn't that we haven't all experienced this, it's that when you have enough of it that you actually notice it. Which is why reviews are so interesting. Like
mm-hmm.
teaching your sister self to do a review, whether or not you do it is not the important thing. The question is, do you sit and ask yourself what happened? Doesn't matter whether you get an answer. What matters is that you were interested in your own practice. You're not just doing it and then looking toward the next thing. You take a moment and wonder what the result is. Therefore, having seeded your brain consciousness, the vijnana, with interest about what you're actually doing. So that sponsors the naming part of your own experience so you can see things. It enriches your practice to do the review bit. Even though it's boring to the mind, because the mind, well, nothing, you know? Well, nothing happened.
It's all nothing.
And yeah, so anyway, and now I got to do this. Because
mm.
vijnana is like, you know. Depending on what type of person you are, going through all the reasons why what you're going to do next is a big issue. Or why it's going to be a snap. Based on past experience. Based on what you like. Based on what you're familiar with. Based on maintaining control of your sense of self. Based on self-grasping. Not on new experience. Based on no inherent self. Based on just being in the moment. You don't have to worry about ego structure. It's continuously coming into being and dissolving again. You don't have to get rid of the ego. You just have to quit chasing after it and trying to hold it. You got infinite number of egos, and they're always ready to come up. There's an ego for everything. You got more egos than you can ever possibly manifest. So you don't have to protect yourself. just see how often you can just throw them away and watch how it just comes right back. And I'm like, better than boomerangs. And often used as deadly weapons. Subdued group tonight. How are you doing? No questions for me, my dear?
Sort of what you've been talking about is clarifying some things.
Okay.
I guess, and I'll probably get into my head too much about this concept.
La-di-da, don't even think that.
Okay. When you're talking about being in the moment where you're coming from.
Being present. The vijnana is still there, but you're not clinging to it. The sense of self is still there, but you're not clinging to it.
Okay.
You know, like when you're watching fireworks and you really love it,
yeah.
You still say, oh, I really like that. But as it fades, you don't say, oh no! Ah! Only put blue ones up or I'll kill you. You know, you don't do that, do you?
No.
And there's a sense with the next one, oh wow.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's an ego arising in every moment. It's not the ego that's the problem, it's the grasping after having one that you
feel gives you a separateness and a safety and an identity and a validity rather than trusting the validity of whatever is arising. When Gurdjieff finished working with his teachers, he said, and he was going to leave, and they also had suggested that it was probably time for him to leave, and he said, well, where should I go? And they said to him, go wherever you go. The Dharma will lead you. The teaching will lead you. Mm-hmm. It isn't a matter of what's right or where I go if you're not caught in self-grasp. People sometimes say to me, why do you live in Didsbury? I say, yeah, go figure. I don't know. They say, why do you live in Toronto? I say, yeah, go figure. Why are you doing a retreat in the seashells? Yeah, go figure. Why are you going to Australia? Good question. Why are you teaching in Edmonton? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, thanks. I don't know. But when I'm doing it, I know. Oh, but it's because you're here. Oh, I see. Oh, because I'm in love again. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, I'm so fickle. It's you. Oh, it's you. Oh. Because I want to learn grief. Because I want to learn inappropriateness. Because I want to learn joy. Because I want to learn non-preference. Because I want I'm a megalomaniac. I'm a megalomaniac wannabe.
And your evil lair is
Disney. You got it now. Go mark your map. Where's that world?
I told you there's an X above your house in the sky like the first time I came there. Seriously.
No, you did. The clouds are making an X.
Perfect X. This marks the spot. You are here. Like your poem the other day. You are here.
Isn't that a lovely poem? You want to hear a lovely poem if you ever have any questions? Should I read it again?
Yes, please.
Who's going to... I'll get it this time. This time I did something to earn my keep. Okay, I'll go get it. Oh, come on, this door or this door? This door doesn't have to make it for me. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here.
And you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes, listen. It answers, I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again by saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. David Wagner. Wagoner. Lost. It's beautiful, eh? Exactly. It's exactly. You're not lost. Where you call here, oh, you are, is called. Wherever we are, if you feel that you're lost, all you have to do is stand still, and everything will find you. You can find yourself by saying, here. So gorgeous. Here. It's all the magic we need, you know, the power of awareness. So straightforward. But in order to do that, we have to put down our habit of guardedness, preparing for, making up for, you know, whatever it is. Remember how hard it was to accept the fact that you weren't perfect? Remember how hard it was to accept the fact that your parents weren't perfect? Remember how wonderful it was to accept the fact that you weren't perfect? Remember how wonderful it was to accept the fact your parents weren't perfect? Remember the sigh of relief when you understood that anything that is formed is imperfect, but it's perfect in its motion through the present. If it's stagnant, it's imperfect. If it's moving, it's perfect. It was so difficult for me. Reading that awareness was a power. I'm going to keep telling you this. And I kept going around saying, yeah, a power for what? What is awareness a power for? What do you do with it? What do you get from it? Well, number one, you get no getting. Oh my God. Can't be right. I mean, you know. That just had me so bewildered for about a year and a half. So I've been with Ananda Bodhi for about, you know, 8 months at that point, and I'm reading this book by some Theravada monk who says awareness is a power, and I'm like scratching my head. To reach right into my brain doing it. A power for what? A power for what? I was like, you know. I was
so devastating, and I couldn't figure it out. And I knew I was probably stupid, because probably everybody else knew, and that's why they hadn't put it in the book. So I didn't really ask. She knows what awareness is about. Oh, maybe she... Oh, he knows. I know I don't know. Watch myself, obviously I don't know.
Imagine that awareness is a power. It is a power. It is. Yes, because you are in the present with the memory. The memory is coming to the present. Making the mistake that thinking that if you're in the present, that means you're not going to have some thought about the future or the past, ignores the power of the present. The present is not exclusive. The past and future meet in the present. And when it's necessary for something in the future to come up, it arises in the present. It's always the present if you pay attention. If you're telling me something, which you honestly were, about those people in the hospital, and what it meant to you to wake up and not know who you were and have that person there that you could ask, where are we? And you're telling me that because that is a vivid part of your present understanding. Is that true? Mm-hmm. If I am now recalling that for you, I'm doing it in the present, which includes that experience. Everything that has happened is present now. It's when we use our mind without feeling the present to select certain things that are our usual story to make the present fit what we have decided in the past was safe, that you're cutting it off. When you won't try on a pair of shoes because you've decided you don't like them, that's not being in the present. If you try on a pair of shoes because you wonder if you have to always dislike what you like and are willing to try them on without clinging to your past dislike, and then saying, well, gee, I don't know whether I like or dislike these, that's being in the present. If you decide you don't feel like trying them on right now because there's something else you want to do, that's being in the present. But if you use your idea to block yourself from the potential, from the water of all possibility that is continuously nourishing and supporting your being, that's self-grasping, holding your walls. That makes sense? So it isn't that you have to always put it down, but you have to be able to choose to put it down. You can't be clinging to it. Especially, you know, a friend of mine was talking to me about how they always wanted to be help me because I've been so helpful for them, but they just don't know what to do. And I said to them, say the alphabet. And they said, why?
Say the alphabet?
Yeah.
They were just telling me very loudly in almost a complaining tone how they were so grateful to me and they always wanted to be there and serve me, but they just didn't know what they could do for me. So I said to them, tell me the alphabet. And they said, why? Which was, you know, I didn't know why I said, tell me the alphabet, but that was the end of my conversation. That was all I had to do. Because they didn't just tell me the alphabet. They really want to save me, serve me, and be grateful to me. I say, tell me the alphabet, and they have to know why before they can do it. Yeah. They have an idea that they're grateful to me. And they have an idea that they would like to do great things for me. But to tell me the alphabet isn't big enough. Their conditions is what they're calling service. They want to do service as long as it fits into what they want to do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So they said, why? So end of conversation as far as I'm concerned. Your sense that you want me to tell you what you want. I want you to do. I just did, and you didn't do it. End of conversation. Next. How's the weather? Heard any good jokes lately? I mean, excuse me, I gotta go play Nintendo. You know, I mean, who cares? Do you understand? Kind of like Leonard Cohen's poem, you know that one about the cuckold song, you know that one? He starts it by saying, if this looks like a poem, I want to warn you right at the beginning, it's not meant to be one. I don't want to turn anything like this into poetry. Oh, I know all about your part in her, in it, how it all happened. You took her to your room, had a few drinks, and in an hour or two, it was done. And then he goes on and he says, I don't know why I'm talking to you about this. I've got other things to do. I got to say my prayers. I got to stand by the window. Anyway, the important thing was to cuckold Leonard Cohen. I like that line because it's got my name in it. I repeat, the important thing was to cuckold Leonard Cohen. I don't have time for this. The fact is, I'm turning to gold. Turning to gold. It's a long process, they say. It happens in stages. This is to inform you that I've already turned to clay. It's a brilliant poem. I misquoted it, but that gives you an idea of it. It's called The Cuckold Song. It was in The Spice Box of Earth, one of his early books. If this looks like a poem, I want to warn you right at the beginning. It's not meant to be. I don't want to turn anything like this into poetry. It's brilliant, isn't it? Look, I'm trying to have a conversation with you about something that's really important to me. Mm-hmm. And why is it important to me? I would like to talk about something that I think is important between us. Oh. Mm-hmm. Please, I'd like to hear this. Is that true? Mm-hmm. If it's between us, it's not me in a lesser position and you doing this power over me, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. Isn't that true? Where one of you can so easily be misunderstood. Isn't that true? But if you're willing to come together again and say, okay, I'm misunderstood there, where can we go? Everything opens again, doesn't it? It's not that every conversation has to be correct, it's that you have to have the awareness to see yourself when you're trapping yourself in your own dogma. I have to have that awareness. Because I have found it's useful. You know, as I talk about it a lot, because I'm hoping you'll find it's useful, And then you could help me remember. That's called Sangha. Isn't it? You could feel at that last retreat that Sangha is really happening. Couldn't you?
Yeah.
Couldn't you?
Yeah.
There was the actual sense of support for everybody by their own work. Each person by their own work was responding to the support of everybody. Could you feel that? Wasn't that lovely?
I could feel it.
I'm going, there you go. The group is flying. Whether everybody was there or not doesn't matter. There is a core now. Maitreya has a lot to do with that. The sense of not closing the door on her, even though you can't make her happy. Not about somebody else doing what you want them to. Is it? Is it? I mean, there's a certain amount of that involved in parenting. But when you're mothering the higher, you have to go beyond that. The purpose in parenting is to be able to give your child your best. But there is a certain point where you got to let them go and see how they did. Isn't that true? But in terms of community, how, if I do my best, does that fit in to help all the community want to do their best? Not I maybe need to give them more, or teach them more, you know? If that's necessary, it will arise in the present, won't it?
Mm-hmm.
But in a really good community, there is a sense that everybody has the right to fail. And the community works it together. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
That's a sangha. That's love, isn't it? That's a very different kind of quality than we often think of about Sangha, isn't it? But I have experienced that a few times. And to me, that's community. Where if somebody gets all lost in the woods, we all sit down and wait until they figure out where to go, and then we all go together. We all get lost together, we all get found together, because it's always here. There isn't a better place. This is it. And there was that feeling in the retreat. People felt that they were actually here. I could feel that. Even the people who weren't sure why they were there, because there were a couple of them. They felt the here-ness. So this work, this group, you know, has done a lot of work, and it's starting to come through. Whether you're on the retreat or not, I mean, that's not the point. The point is that this can manifest from a group of us who do manage to go on the retreat. And that's profound. That takes a lot of awareness, which is a power.
What are you
doing?
So, geez, it's 9 o'clock. And you didn't even have a question for that last diatribe. Thank you again. Shinrei, see you tomorrow. Okay?
or did you do something else? Mm-hmm. You're doing torsion chin raising? Is that what we're doing, or what are we doing?
We've been going back and forth between the two. We don't have a lot. We've never had enough copies of the Tarchin thing, so sometimes we share a couple. And I've been transcribing it on the computer, but I had so many different versions of how I made it so it would be flip over properly, and then I got lost into which one I had, and then I ran out of time, so I still haven't made the requisite number of copies that I need.
Yeah, okay. So
we could do the other one.
We'll do a chin raising tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Depending on how many people are here, which one we do. How's that?
Mm-hmm. I was going to see if anyone wants that tarot book that you did at Storwood. I'm going to order some copies from Amazon. I think we get a discount over $25. The 927 American paperback.
With the color?
Yeah.
I'll have one.
With the color.
Are you buying from the U.S. or from Canada?
I couldn't get it on the Canadian site, so I just went to America. It's 927.
Well, can they go across the border?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they ship across the border.
Yeah, I don't know. I get them in about 10 days.
Really?
Because
I had a problem getting books lately across the border.
From Amazon?
Yeah, it cost me $32 a book to... for customs, or whatever they call it, brokerage fee.
That's if you, if it's shipped by UPS or FedEx or those ones.
If you just do it ordinary.
You can do it post office, they charge about,
I've never paid duty and I get books from Amazon.
Not duty, but
it's brokerage fee.
Brokerage, but if you do ordinary.
Yeah, it just
ordinary.
Comes in the post office, they drop it on my door. That's great.
I want one.
Okay.
I'll have one.
Yep.
When are you ordering it?
Day or two.
Okay, let me check it on my list to check if I have that one.
This goes on your fridge.
So there's some tarot theme happening?
Yeah, on Saturday, my night.
Yeah.
I promised before I went in retreat that we'd start doing Western Mysteries, so I started with the tarot last night. We just started. Just sort of covered the numbers. And
is the John Foster Peace one?
Oh, so it's not this one.
Your first introduction when you came and spoke to us all about Western Mysteries and the formation of the four sides and structure and all that. I recorded that and then I also transcribed it.
Did it?
Do you want a copy of that?
Oh, it might be interesting, yeah. Was it good?
It was very good.
Oh, there you go. Sometimes I'm good.
I was very impressed.
And when she's good, she's very, very good. And when she's bad, she is horrid.
Yeah.
Sure.
It wasn't a wasted word.
Yeah, but you love me.
But it was good. It was.
Thank you. So, beautiful light in your heart. Spread out. Anybody you want to pray for? Energy flows. Gold light. Whatever wholesomeness is to be added by our
We share with all beings that it blesses us. Whatever wholesomeness is to be added by our coming together. We share with all beings that it blesses us.
Be shared with all beings. Thank you. Thank you for your great compassion.